Aham eva sam eva gre. Nan yad yat sat as sat parang. Paschad aham yade tach cha. Yo vashishyeta sausmyaham. Aham eva sam eva gre. Nan yad yat Sad asad param Paschadaham yad etachcha Yo vashishyeta sosmyaham Aham evasam evagre Nan yad yad sad asad param Paschad aham yad etachcha Yo vashishyeta sosmyaham
Personality of Godhead. Eva, certainly. Asam, existed. Eva, only. Agre, before the creation. Na, never. Anyat, anything else. Yat, all those, sat, the effect, asat, the cause, param, the supreme, paschat, at the end, Aham. I, the personality of Godhead. Yat. All these. Etat. Creation. Cha. Also. Yaha. Everything. Avishishyeta. Remains. Saha. That. Asmi. I am. Aham. I, the personality of Godhead. I, the personality of Godhead, who was existing before the creation, when there was nothing but myself, nor was there the material nature, the cause of this creation. That which you see now is also I, the personality of Godhead. And after annihilation, what remains will also be I, the personality of Godhead. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We should note very carefully that the personality of Godhead is addressing Lord Brahma and specifying with great emphasis himself, pointing out that it is he, the personality of Godhead, who existed before the creation. It is only he who maintains the creation, and it is he only who remains after the annihilation of the creation. Brahma is also a creation of the Supreme Lord. The impersonalist puts forth the theory of oneness in the sense that Brahma, also being the same principle of I, because he is an emanation from the I, the absolute truth, is identical with the Lord. The principle of I, and that there is thus nothing more than the principle of I, as explained in this verse. Accepting the argument of the impersonalist, it is to be admitted that the Lord is the creator I, and that Brahma is the created I. Therefore, there is a difference between the two I's, namely the predominator and the predominated I. Therefore, there are still two I's, even accepting the argument of the impersonalist. But we must note carefully that those two I's are accepted in the Vedic literature, Kathopanishad, in the sense of quality. The Kathopanishad says, Nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam eka bahunam yo vidadati kaman. The creator I and the created I are both accepted in the Vedas as qualitatively one because both of them are nityas and chetanas. But the singular I is the creator. And the created I's are of plural number, because there are many eyes, like Brahma and those generated by Brahma. It is the simple truth. The father creates or begets a son, and the son also creates many other sons, and all of them may be one as human beings, but at the same time the father, the son, and the grandsons are all different. The son cannot take the place of the father, nor can the grandsons. Simultaneously, the father, the son, and the grandsons are one and different also. As human beings, they are one, but as relativities, they are different. Therefore, the relativities of the creator and the created, or the predominator and the predominated, have been differentiated in the Vedas, by saying that the predominator I is the feeder of the predominated I's. And thus there is a vast difference between the two principles of I. In another feature of this verse, no one can deny the personalities of both the Lord and Brahma. Therefore, in the ultimate issue, both the predominator and the predominated are persons. This conclusion refutes the conclusion of the impersonalists that in the ultimate issue, everything is impersonal. This impersonal feature stressed by the less intelligent impersonalist school is refuted by pointing out that the predominator I is the absolute truth and that he is a person. The predominated I, Brahma, is also a person, but he is not the absolute. For realization of oneself in spiritual psychology, it may be convenient to assume oneself to be the same principle as the absolute truth, but there is always the difference of the predominated and the predominator, as clearly pointed out here in this verse, which is grossly misused by the impersonalists. Brahma is factually seeing face to face his predominator Lord, who exists in his transcendental eternal form even after the annihilation of the material creation. The form of the Lord as seen by Brahma existed before the creation of Brahma, and the material manifestation with all the ingredients and agents of material creation are also energetic expansions of the Lord. And after the exhibition of the Lord's energy comes to a close, what remains is the same personality of Godhead. Therefore, the form of the Lord exists in all circumstances of creation, maintenance, and annihilation. The Vedic hymns confirm this fact in the statement, Vasudeva va idam agra asina brahma nacha shankara eko narayana asina brahman nishana. Before the creation, there was none except Vasudeva. There was neither Brahma nor Shankar. Only Narayan was there and no one else, neither Brahma nor Ishan. Sripad Shankaracharya also confirms in his comments on the Bhagavad Gita that Narayan, or the personality of Godhead, is transcendental to all creation, but that the whole creation is the product of avyakta. Therefore, the difference between the creator and the created is always there, although both the creator and created are of the same quality.
Sri Gurave Namaha.
Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, entitled Answers by Citing the Lord's Version, text number 33. Srimad Bhagavatam is the commentary of Vedanta Sutra by Srila Veda Vyas, the very author. Srila Prabhupada tells us a very simple but instructive story that there was a author who wrote a book entitled Shah Jahan. One of his friends read this book and found that the main theme of the book appeared to be the atrocious activities of Aurangzeb. So he inquired from the author, the book should be entitled Aurangzeb. Why is it entitled Shah Jahan? He seems to be a very major, minor character in the book. Ah, Maharaji, dhanyavad. The author explained, Shah Jahan was the father. He built beautiful tomb for his deceased wife, Taj Mahal. He had many sons. But one of his sons, one of the younger sons, in fact, Aurangzeb, he murdered his brothers and imprisoned his father just to take power and control. And in the process, all the narration is of the book is actually revealing what type of suffering Shah Jahan was experiencing by seeing the abominable activities of his son. So Srila Prabhupada explains in this regard that the person who really knows what is the essence of a book is the author. Srila Vedavyas wrote the Vedanta Sutra, and many, many persons have written commentaries of Vedanta Sutra. But his bhasya, or his commentary, is Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore, in Gaudiya Vaishnav line, the emphasis is in giving commentaries on Srimad Bhagavatam. Vedanta Sutra begins, Janmad Yasha Yataha, that the absolute truth is him from whom everything emanates. Here in these very important nutshell verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, Vedavyas is explaining through the mouth of Shukadev, or he is explaining the words of Shukadev Goswami, how the Supreme Absolute Truth, the personality of Godhead, is the source of everything. Ultimately, it is only He that exists. Everything is emanating from Him. All the material and spiritual worlds are emanating from Him. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matra sarvam pravartate iti matlab jante mam buddha bhava samandate. These are the four nutshell verses of Bhagavad Gita, beginning with that everything emanates from me. I am the source of all spiritual and all material worlds. Those who worship me with love and devotion are those who actually know me in truth. Srila Prabhupada, speaking on behalf of all of our great acharyas in this purport, is explaining how the impersonal school of philosophy is very fond of taking advantage of this verse to show that ultimately there is only one, there is nothing else. God is everything. Ultimately, everything comes from God, everything ultimately comes back to God. So anything except God is an illusion, and it is only God that exists. But Parashri Shaktir Vibhavadaiva Shruyate, the Lord has many energies. And although, yes, it is only God that exists, God eternally expands from Himself into unlimited jivatmas, His tatashta shakti, His marginal energy. He also manifests His spiritual energy, His material energy, and all are existing eternally. Mamayvamso jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. Srila Prabhupada is quoting from Kathopanishad. Nityo nityanam chaitanas chaitananam eka bahunam yobiradati kaman. That there is one supreme predominator, but there are also unlimited, plural, predominated living entities who are of the same quality but quantitatively part and parcel. This was Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's first teaching to Sanatana Goswami. Jivara Swarupoi Krishnara Nityadas. The living entity is eternally the servant of Krishna. We are eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss, but we are always subordinate to Krishna. Our constitutional nature is to love Krishna and to serve Krishna. We can never become Krishna. Srila Prabhupada explains herein in great detail, with much emphasis, the difference between the predominator I and the predominated I. The difference between Vishnu and Brahma in this particular instance. Brahma is the first living being born within this particular universe. He is born from the navel of Garbhodakshayi Vishnu. And he's in a bewildered state. He does not know who he is, where he is, what he's supposed to do, where he's supposed to go. He's traveling up and down the stem of that lotus flower trying to figure out what's happening. But it's simply impossible. He sees nothing but darkness all around him. But then by the mercy of the Lord, because of his sincere desire, because of his sincere desire to find the truth and to understand, the Lord spoke from within his heart that he should perform tapasya. He should purify himself by such tapasya. And by sincerely executing the will of the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead revealed himself to Lord Brahma. So Brahma and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, are very clearly the master and the servant. The source of all conflict, both within and without, that causes suffering is forgetfulness of our constitutional position. When we want to be the predominator, the enjoyer, the controller, then we are in this state of darkness. Actually, in that state, our forgetfulness appears to separate us from the Lord. We were reading the other day in one beautiful verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, fourth canto, where it is explained how when one forgets, when the spirit soul, the jivatma, forgets his relationship with the Supreme Soul and his eternal constitutional nature, then it appears that actually his soul is lost. And Srila Prabhupada explains, actually the soul is never lost. The soul is the seer of everything. The soul is our very essence, our very being. Love of God is the closest thing. It is the integral nature of our soul. It may seem that love of God is so far, far, far away. When we look at the anartas, the unwanted desires that are plaguing our consciousness. But it is not far away. There is nothing closer than our ecstatic love of God. It is the nature, the integral nature of the soul. But when we forget that, then for all practical purposes, our soul is lost. That jewel, that treasure of pure bhakti is lost. Lord Chaitanya gives example of a man whose father gave him great treasure of wealth. The fact is that treasure is his. And it's right in his own yard. But as long as he forgets that his father left him that treasure, as long as he forgets where that treasure is, it has no practical value. He could do nothing with it. He has to live as a very, very poor, starving man. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came with this message. Wake up, sleeping souls. You are sleeping on the lap of the witch of Maya. Understand who you are and what your great treasure really is. The Lord descends in this world again and again and again just to remind us of what we have forgotten. This was Srila Prabhupada's message in New York City in the early days of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. A newspaper reporter inquired from Srila Prabhupada, actually challenged him, "We have our own religion, Swamiji, why have you come here?" He said, "I have come to remind you of what you have forgotten. That we are all eternal servants of God. Our nature is to love God. I have not come to convert, I have come to enlighten you into who you really are." That is the mission of the Lord, and that is the mission of all of his beloved devotees. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanirbhavati bharat. The Lord descends in this world again and again and again in every millennium just to teach us who we are, what is our relationship with him. Krishna descended, spoke Bhagavad Gita, which culminates Sarva dharman puritya jamam ekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papibhyo moksha ishami masaj. Just abandon all varieties of dharma. Surrender to me. I shall protect you from all sinful activities. Have no fear. And how? How to surrender to the Lord? The Lord teaches us in such simple and clear instruction. Manmana bhavamad bhakto madhya jimnam namaskuru. Always think of me. Become my devotee. Worship me. Offer your homage unto me. In this way you will come to me without fail. It is my promise. That is the mission of the Lord. And that is the mission of the Lord's servants. In just a few days, the appearance day of Lord Sri Ramchandra will be celebrated, especially here in Sri Sri Radharas Bihari Mandir. By the mercy of His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Sita, Sri Ram, Sri Lakshman, and Sri Hanumanji have personally descended on your altar to give you their beloved, their blessed darshan and bestow upon you their eternal loving service. The pastimes of Sri Ramchandra are so very, very instructive and so deeply moving to the heart of those who hear from the proper sources. The lesson of today's particular verse that we are not the predominator, we are predominated. Unless we understand the supremacy of the absolute truth and surrender, whatever arrangements we make in our life only create havoc. Ravana. He was very powerful. Son of the great Brahman Bhishrada. When he was born, Ravana, he came out of his mother's womb with 10 heads, 20 arms. How many fingers? 100? Yes? Very ghastly person. And his eyes were flaming with anger. He was just looking around with utter hatred and envy at everybody around him. And from his voice, from his mouth, came a scornful roar. Can you imagine giving birth to a child like that? He was given the name Dasamukha. And as he grew older, he performed thousands of years of tapasya and achieved tremendous powers from the demigods, especially Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. He was so powerful. Even the demigods trembled in fear of Ravana. Now, when you have great power, it becomes unbearable for anyone to have anything that you do not have. So we know the story, how Suparnaka went to Sri Lanka after she got her nose cut off nearby in Nasik, Panchavati. And she explained to Ravana the beauty of Sita. Sita is the consort, the beloved energy of Sri Ram. She is exclusively for his enjoyment. But actually, all material natures, because an expansion of Sita is Durga, who is the predominating deity of material nature. All material nature, everything is meant for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anyone who wants to take any of God's property and enjoy it for their own selfish personal interests is in fact accepting the role to one degree or another of Ravana. We want to enjoy what is God's property. But however expert, however successful we are in the eyes of man, the story of Ramayana teaches that we will fail. Ultimately, we will lose everything. So many well-wishers were pleading with Ravana, please do not try to steal Sita, because Sri Ram is all-powerful. Vibhishan told him this. Other great Rakshasas told him this. But he couldn't listen to anyone. This is the nature of the false ego. We think we're so intelligent. We cannot take good advice. His own wife, Mandodari, she's saying, you have me. I'm also very beautiful. And you have so many other apsaras that you're enjoying with. Forget this, Sita. He couldn't listen. His brother, his wife, and he went to that mystic yogi, Maricha, with a plan. I want you to change your form into a beautiful golden deer and allure Ram and Lakshman away so I can steal Sita. And Maricha said, Ravana, I'm your servant. I'm a Rakshasa like you. Please, listen to what I say. Just go back to Sri Lanka and be happy. You already have a golden city. You have the demigods are fearful of you. You're in the process of trying to build a stairway to the heavens. Just go ahead and build it, but don't disturb Ram, because I know who Ram is. At one time, my dear colleague, Subahu, and myself, we were harassing the sages who were living in Vishwamitra Muni's ashram. On your order, we would not allow anyone to perform any type of yajna. But then Ram came with a single... With all of our powers, we fought against him. We were displaying mystic potencies that no human being can possibly tolerate. We were throwing down mountains and oceans and everything. And all he did is with one arrow, he immediately slain Subahu, my friend. And then he shot another arrow that hit me in the chest. And I flew back 800 miles into the ocean. And then another time, myself and another Rakshasa colleague, we took the form of stags in the forest to attack Ram. But again, by his powers, we were rendered utterly helpless. I ran for my life, and I keep running and running. In fact, I gave up. I renounced my occupation as a murderous Rakshasa, and here I'm living as a hermit doing austerities, just trying to somehow or other forget Ram, but I can't. When I look into the clouds, I see Ram coming from behind the clouds to get me. When I see a tree, I see Ram coming from behind that tree. When I see the sun, I see Ram coming out of the sun. All I see is Ram everywhere. He's indestructible. He's supreme. Please, Ravana, take my advice. Just go back to Sri Lanka and be happy. Ravana took his advice, but then changed his mind and came back. Something like Kamsa. And he said, Maricha, two choices. Either do what I say, or I will kill you and eat you. So he did it. And at Panchabati, for those of you who have been, there is a place called Sita Harana. The place where Ravana disguised himself as a sage to steal Sita. After defeating Jatayu, he traveled all the way to Sri Lanka. Now Lord Ram, when he returned, seeing Sita gone, he displayed his love in separation. He was searching everywhere. Ultimately, we don't have so much time, he came to Kishkindha Kshetra, where he met with Sri Hanumanji. Hanumanji brought him to Sugriva. And Ram was explaining to Sugriva, I want your help to find Sita. And Sugriva said, I think I know which way she went. And he explained how not long before he saw this ten-headed demon, Ravana, in the sky. And there was a beautiful, chaste, effulgent girl under his captivity. And she saw some of us monkeys, and she threw a cloth down. And I still have that cloth. Sugriva went to his cave. For those of you who have been to Hampi or Kishkindakshetra, that cave is still there, Sugriva's cave. And he came out with this cloth. And Ram opened it up, and there were precious jewels. Lord Sri Ram began to cry in love because he knew the origin of those jewels. When Sita Ram and Lakshman were living peacefully at Chitrakoot on the bank of the Mandakini Ganga River, they were very peacefully serving the great sages and rishis, hearing their pravachan, serving them nicely, performing the yajna, the sacred fire, which was the yuga dharma of the Treta Yuga. During that time, Ram brought Sita to meet Anasuya, the wife of Atri Muni, who was glorified throughout the three worlds for her chastity. And Sri Ramchandra requested Sita that you should take instructions from Anasuya on the duties and characteristics of a chaste woman. Sita, who was so young, so humble, and so charming, she touched the feet of the great sage's wife on the bank of the Mandakini Ganga and asked, "Please, please instruct me." Anasuya, her heart was overflowing with affection, said, "You are the supreme goddess of fortune. You are my worshipable deity. Whatever good qualities anyone has is only because of your mercy. How can I instruct you? But it is your nature that you want to teach the world through your devotees. So for your pleasure, I will instruct you." At the end of those instructions, Anasuya gave Sita a bag of celestial jewels. Actually, when Sita Ram and Lakshman left Ayodhya, they left all their wealth. They didn't bring jewels with them. They just put on tree bark and matted their hair. Lived in this little straw hut made out of leaves and twigs. But she had those jewels of Anasuya. And when she saw those monkeys, she threw them down, hoping that someday Ram will come. And if they show those jewels to Ram, he will know that she is still living and the direction she has gone. So after the monsoon rain season, it was decided that the Vanaras, the monkey army of Sugriva, would search for Sita. Of course, we knew first Ram, actually, there was a reciprocation of love. Ram did away with Bali, the elder brother of Sugriva. And then Sugriva was coronated as king. And during the rainy season, for those of you who have gone to Kishkindakshetra, there is a place called Malyavanta, or Prashravana in the Vedas it is also called. That is the cave that Sri Ram lived in for the 4 months of Chaturmasya, because it was too difficult to look for Sita during rainy season. And if you go in that cave, you will find a beautiful large deity of Sri Ram. In one hand he has a mala, and in the other hand is touching his heart. And the pujaris there tell that he's chanting the names of Sita with love and always remembering her, meditating on her in his heart. When all the army of Sugriva was dispatched in the four directions to search for Sita, Sri Ramchandra called for Hanumanji because he knew that he was going to be the one to find her. He gave her his own ring and a message for her. That message that he was soon coming to deliver her. So they were searching and searching and searching and searching. Ultimately, they came upon Jatayu's elder brother, Sampati. And Sampati actually was about to eat them all. But then he realized that they were devotees of Ram, so he became very happy. And he explained with his vision, he could see Sri Lanka. And there in the Ashoka Van, Sita was being held in captivity. So how to get to Sri Lanka? Angada, Jambavan, and all of Surasena, they were all gathered together. It was 800 miles of ocean between the mainland of India and Sri Lanka at that time. And time was of the essence. So each of the monkeys were saying how far they could jump. I could jump 10 yojanas. Another said, I could jump 20. I could jump 30. But nobody could jump 100 yojanas except Angada, the son of Bali. He said, I could do it, but I wouldn't be able to get back. So this is a great dilemma. There was no one amongst them who could jump there and back. Then Jambavan spoke. He said, actually, when I was younger, I could have easily jumped. When Vamanadev was taking his step, second step, I was circumambulating his foot. But now I'm an old man. I cannot do what I used to do. But Hanuman, why are you so quiet? It is no problem for you. Now, Hanumanji was very humble. And also, when he was a little boy, he was given a benediction that he would forget his powers unless somebody reminded him. So when Jambavan said, Hanuman, you could do it, Hanuman said, yes, I will do it. And he went on top of a mountain, big mountain. And just to encourage all of his fellow soldiers, his comrades of the Vanara army, he expanded himself very big. Because, in fact, all of those devotees, those monkeys, their hearts were simply fixed on getting Sita. Their hearts were breaking to think of Ram's beloved consort imprisoned by the lust, anger, and greed of this demon Rakshasa, Ravana. Intolerable. So Ram, to give them all courage and faith, he expanded himself very big. And then he jumped. Haribo. Should I tell this story? When the pressure, his devotion was so full of enthusiasm and determination that when he jumped, the pressure of his foot against that mountain caused all the minerals to just start flowing out of the mountain. The pressure caused all the jewels to start coming out of the mountain. All the snakes in the holes of the mountains, they just came out completely bewildered with raised hoods, and they were so angry, they just started biting the rocks. And the sages and rishis who were living in that mountain, they were just chanting the glories of Hanuman, the great devotee of Lord Ram. He jumped over that vast expanse of water. Sita is the personification of pure devotional service. The factual history of this Ramayana can also be seen in terms of certain lessons that are to be learned. In order to reach pure devotional service, in order to really surrender our lives to perform the mission of the Lord, we have to cross the ocean of material existence, where there are many obstacles. As Hanumanji was flying in the air, the demigods were applauding in the heavenly planets. And the lord of the ocean, Vayu, he wanted to render some service. Because to be the servant of the Lord is most pleasing to the Lord. To assist someone in their mission of carrying out the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is a great, great benediction. Just as Lord Ramchandra ordered Hanuman on this mission, similarly, through Parampara, our beloved Srila Prabhupada was ordered by Krishna through his spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, to cross over oceans, to rescue Sita from the kingdom of Ravana, to rescue our hearts, our devotion, from this Ravana civilization of greed, lust, and envy. And anyone who came forward in any way to assist this noble messenger of the Supreme Personality of Godhead was most fortunate, received the most auspicious blessings of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Our book distributors here at Sri Radharas Bihari Temple, how wonderful. Such book distribution this temple is doing. For the December marathon, number 2. And it's actually quite ecstatic that number 1 was Moscow. And it is no coincidence that number 1 and number 2 are both divinely inspired by His Holiness Gopal Krishna Goswami Maharaj. All we could hear is the bell of your glories being You can say as you like, Maharaj. But factually, the biggest book distributors in Moscow are those who are inspired by Srila Gopal Krishna Goswami Maharaj, who in the earliest days went to that. Moscow was like Sri Lanka. Communist country. It wasn't made out of gold, but the mentality was very much. Great Hanumans like Gopal Krishna Goswami just went there, jumped
from Bombay to Moscow. And now inspired those who are assisting him. So many, tens and thousands of books being distributed. And it's not easy. At least Sri Lanka has a temperate climate. It's nice and warm. But December in Moscow? How many of you have been to Moscow in December? And there's no big, beautiful malls where people just are in warm climates. They're out in the freezing, frigid weather. Sometimes, you know, I have seen, you know, your nose runs and it turns into ice. Very difficult place. And they're out in these parking lots and in the streets for 12, 14 hours a day. They can't even move their hands. And they're just distributing books with such enthusiasm and determination. Very, very special. And here, Radharas Bihari Temple. So much determination, enthusiasm. So anyone who assists Srila Prabhupada in his mission gets such auspicious blessings of the Lord. So the sea, the Lord of the sea, Varuna, he wanted to help Hanuman in his mission by giving some hospitality. So he called for the mountain Mainaka to come from underwater. The history of this mountain is very special because in a previous yuga, Satya Yuga, big, big mountains had wings. They could actually fly. And when you had mountains are huge. And in Satya Yuga, the mountains were much bigger than the mountains of today. So because they're so big, such strength, and they could fly anywhere they want, the mountains became proud. It's very dangerous to be big, because the tendency, if you're big, you become proud. And when you become proud, you make apparads to others. So what they would do is they would land, and when they would land, they would crush and destroy entire towns. They would just go, everything finished. So Indra, seeing that the mountains became proud because they were so big and they could fly, he decided to cut off their wings with his vajra, his thunderbolt. And he was doing it. All mountains, they just... Now they couldn't go anywhere because they had no legs, but they did have wings. But now they couldn't go anywhere. But there was that one mountain, Mainaka. And this Mainak mountain, Vayu showed mercy upon him. And as Indra was just coming to attack him and cut off his wings, Vayu just shot a massive wind and hurled them to the bottom of the ocean. Harivo. So Indra could not find him, nor could he reach him. So Varuna called Mainaka to offer some seva to Hanumanji. Harivo, Haridas. He came up. Now, the mountain was made of pure, solid gold, very opulent. And came out of the sea, so beautiful, rose higher and higher and higher. And then the presiding deity of Mainaka Mountain approached Hanumanji with folded palms and said, "Please come, O great messenger of Sri Ram, and rest for some time on the peaks of my mountain. Everything is here for you. It is such a long way to Sri Lanka. You come, you take some rest. And there's the most nourishing herbs that we will provide for you. And nectarine waters and juices from the fruits of the trees. You rest here nicely.
And then, with full vigor, strength, and nourishment, continue on your mission for the Lord Sri Ram. But Sri Hanumanji, with folded palms, said, I am very grateful for your offer of hospitality, but I do not have time. I must execute the mission of my master, Lord Ramchandra. And as a matter of etiquette, Hanumanji touched the Mainaka mountain to accept the offering graciously and then continued on his journey. This is an obstacle in devotional service, that sometimes we will be provided comforts, or sometimes from within or without we are asked to rest for some time from our mission. But a devotee of the Lord understands the urgency to carry out the mission of the Lord, to continue in our sadhana, in our devotional practices. We must continue under all circumstances. We cannot be lazy. We cannot be lethargic. We should not. We may take some rest from vigorous physical activities for our health, but we never take rest from our Krishna consciousness. Let me take a break and not chant my rounds for 6 months. Let me take a break and not read Srimad Bhagavatam for some time. Never, never. No matter what happens, we must continue chanting the holy names. We must continue hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. We must continue in the service of Guru and Krishna. Krishna tells us in Bhagavad Gita that lethargy and ego are two great stumbling blocks. Sometimes devotees become lazy. Srila Prabhupada would not tolerate laziness amongst any of his devotees anywhere, because laziness is like spiritual death. We must be enthusiastic. We must have determination. I remember at New Vrindavan, when Prabhupada was starting New Vrindavan, he said, this is such a nice place. Of course, he came in the summertime. He said, this is such a nice, beautiful place with so many mountains and green trees. Such a nice place to live. So many people will come to live here. But they must chant 16 rounds, they must follow the regulative principles, and they must work hard. They must rise for Mangalarti and work hard. Otherwise, people will come here and be lazy. He said, we do not want lazy hippies or lazy anybody. Krishna consciousness is not a place to take rest. Krishna consciousness is a movement of giving everything we have with determination in the service of Guru and Krishna. That is how we make progress. Srila Prabhupada spoke very strongly because he wanted to root out that natural conditioned inclination to be lazy. And actually, sometimes people are very, very aggressively enthusiastic for their material life, but they're lazy spiritually. Have you seen? Here in Bombay, people could go out and work like anything with such determination and perform such rigorous austerities to make some money and to get some position. But then when you ask them, did you chant your rounds? I didn't have time. Did you come to the temple to hear Srimad Bhagavatam class? I have no time. Are you reading from Srila Prabhupada's books? There's no time. That means spiritually they are lazy. And laziness makes the heart very weak. Our spiritual heart, if you do not exercise it, it becomes very weak and easily victimized by Maya. So Hanumanji, he would not even take 1 second of rest. He was determined, he was enthusiastic, he was committed to the mission of Sri Ram. And he continued. And the demigods, they actually informed the mother of the serpents, Surasa, that Hanuman's coming. Haribo. So Surasa, the mother of all serpents, she appeared from under the waters. She appeared in a massive Rakshashi-like form. Hanuman saw her. They looked at each other. And Surasa, in a very thunderous voice, she was not a timid Mataji. She was very powerful. She roared. Ah, today the gods have bestowed nice food for me. Oh, monkey, I am very fond of eating your flesh and drinking your blood. Today you will be my lunch. Hanuman said, Lord Ramchandra is my master. I must deliver his message to Sita Devi, his beloved consort. That's all. Just let me by, and I promise you, after I perform my service, I will come back and then you can eat me. Surasa said, since when does anyone put faith in the promise of a monkey? I am hungry now. I am the mother of the snakes, and you know how snakes are. When we want something to eat, we eat. We have such appetite that nothing can delay us from seizing our dinner. So she said, at this very moment, I will devour you. So Hanuman became very big. He actually became one yojana in size. One yojana is approximately 8 miles, which is many kilometers. Surasa became 10 yojanas. Hanuman became 20 yojanas. Surasa became 30 yojanas. Hanumanji became 40 yojanas in size. Soon, Surasa was 70 yojanas. Hanumanji became 80 yojanas. Surasa became 90 yojanas size. Hare Krishna. And her mouth seemed to be devouring the entire creation. Can you imagine? A Rakshashi mouth with big fangs. 90 yojanas in size. So Hanumanji understood enough with this competition. Because actually, this false pride of being bigger than somebody else is a great obstacle on the path of bhakti. Surasa was embodiment of pride. She was just puffing herself up bigger, 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 bigger. So competitive. Prabhupada said spiritual competition is good. Spiritual competition is healthy. But spiritual competition means I will try to do more than you so that you will inspire to do more than me, and then I'll be more inspired to do more from you. And in the end, together, we do the most possible service for Guru and Krishna. That is spiritual competition. And everyone's glorifying the enthusiastic efforts of everyone else. But material competition is self-centered. Let me get the credit. Let me get the glory. I am better than you. I am bigger than you. Look at material civilization. As they say, dog eat dog world. Jiva jiva sa jiva nam. Bigger beings eat little beings. Food for other beings. When I was a little boy, I lived in a village. And all in the downtown of that village, it was only about three blocks big. And there were just small little shops owned by families. Just one-story little, like, huts. Family businesses for generations. One family sold clothes. One family sold food. One family sold cameras, like that. Little family-owned restaurants. That was in the 50s and 60s. But recently I went by there. There's no little shops anymore. Now they're all gigantic supermarkets owned by national and international chains. There's Kmart and Walmart and Kroger's and all these little stores. They had to just surrender. And now they're the owner of the little stores. Now they're working as cashiers for these big, big places. Haribo. So this is the nature of Kali Yuga. Big people want to just pulverize small people. Bigger, bigger, bigger. More prestige, more pride. How to overcome that tendency? By humility. By practicing humility. And that's what Hanuman did. When Surasa became 90 yojana mouth. Now some people think that their wives have big mouths. And also some wives think their husbands have big mouths. But this Surasa, she had a big mouth. So Hanumanji, all of a sudden, he became so tiny small. Very little tiny size. Very humble. And like a streak of light, he just flew right into her mouth and went all the way down into her throat. And he actually had like a tour inside of Surasa's body. And then he came out. Little tiny size. Nobody could even see him. Then he resumed his original size and said to Suras, "You have been given the benediction of Brahma that no one could pass you without being devoured by you. I have honored that benediction. You ate me. I went into your mouth. I went into your stomach. I didn't get by you without being devoured by you. So now please let me do my service to Ram." And Surasa, she was actually conquered by Hanuman's humility and his good intelligence. And she blessed him. Assuming her original form, she said, "Hanumanji, I bless you that you will be successful in your mission of traveling to Sri Lanka and delivering the message to Sita." So with that blessing, he continued. So we must, like Hanuman, take a very humble position in our devotional service. But Hanuman's humility was very, very interesting to analyze. He was humble. He gave all credit to Ram, took nothing for himself. He even was willing to take a small position. But he never, ever, ever gave up. If we think we're useless, if we think we have no qualification, if we give up in the mission of the Lord, that is not humility. That is just another type of unfulfilled false ego. But a humble devotee will use whatever means to somehow or other fulfill the mission of the Lord, but take no credit. Not be materially competitive to be bigger, 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 but we'll be whatever we have to be. Either 80 yojanas or the size of the tip of a thumb. We will be whatever we have to be to perform the service of the Lord and give all glory to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Hanumanji traveled on. And then a very strange event took place. So strange that when you hear this story, you will be astounded. Do I have time to continue? Hanuman was flying high into the sky over the ocean, and all of a sudden, he couldn't move. It was as if he was paralyzed in midair. He wasn't going forward, he wasn't going backward, he wasn't going sideways. He couldn't move. He was just stuck in the sky. Hanumanji became very bewildered. What's happened? Couldn't move. And there was nothing touching him. He was just in the sky. So he looked up and he looked right and north, south, east, west. Then he looked down. And he found there was a horrid Rakshashi that had grabbed on to his shadow. Hare Krishna. Her name is Simika. Now this Simika, she had tantric black arts. She could actually control a person by taking hold of their shadow. That's how she ate. Bird would fly overhead. She didn't have to get up and find the bird. She would just, right where she was, she just, the shadow, she just take the shadow and pull the bird down and eat it. Very powerful mystic yogini she was. And very, very envious and violent. Actually, it's the nature of an envious person is they're always looking for the shadow. Yes? Envious people do not like to see other people's good qualities. They only look for the dark, the shadow in them. Envious people are very, very fond to find faults in others, to see whatever darkness may be in another person's character, qualifications, or activities. And even if they're not there, they'll somehow or other see it. Devotees are always looking for light. Envious persons are always looking for darkness. They are attracted to darkness. Bhagavad Gita says, Sanisha Sarvabhutanam, that what is day for a devotee is night for a common man, and what is night for a devotee is day for the common man. Devotees are always looking for the chance to serve Krishna. They are asleep to the darkness of ignorance. Whereas materialistic people, they make their whole life creating an entire civilization within the darkness of ignorance. And they sleep to the light of Krishna's mercy. So this qualification of envy is a great, great obstacle. Not only do envious people look for the darkness in others, but they try to overcome, conquer, or destroy others on the basis of that darkness. They try to put themselves in a superior position by pointing out the faults of others. So this was Simika's mentality. She would just grab on to the dark shadow and control and devour people by that process. So Hanumanji looked down and saw that his shadow was captured.
And with folded palms, he requested Sumika, "Let me do my seva, please." She wanted to eat him. "I'll let you eat me later, but let me do my seva." He only wanted to live to serve. That's all. He only wanted to sustain his life so long as he could use it in the Lord's service. But she just horribly, she just growled and screamed at Hanumanji and said, "I will eat you at this very moment. No one can cross by me." She was so envious. She opened her mouth to a gigantic size, to devour Hanumanji. Hanumanji again understood. No use becoming big. He became the size of the tip of a thumb. And just flew right into her mouth, right down her throat, right into her stomach. And he traveled around inside her body and went to each one of her organs and with his claws ripped them apart. Then he went right to her heart and Hanumanji ki! Ripped it with his sharpened claws. Then he flew out of her mouth and he stood looking right in front of her, and she was like, she just screamed and fell into the ocean dead. Sri Hanumanji ki. In this way, Hanumanji was not willing to let any obstacle come between him and the fulfillment of his service to his guru and Lord Sri Ramchandra. Flying over the remaining portion of ocean, he saw the beautiful island of Sri Lanka. The buildings were resplendent with gold, beautiful forests, and he landed on the Trikut Mountain. And it was there in Sri Lanka, actually, when he first arrived, another lady, her name was Lankini. Hanuman was a brahmachari. Somehow all these ladies were trying to stop him. This is a lesson to brahmacharis. Don't let any ladies divert you from the path. Of course, every devotee lady we see as our very mother and offer them all respect. But this material attachment, that is our enemy. So Lankini came forward. She said, "I am the predominating guardian of Sri Lanka, and I have received a benediction from Lord Brahma that no one can pass me against my will." Now Hanumanji, he was such a respectful and humble devotee. But in the service of Ram, according to time, place, and circumstance, you have to, as Prabhupada said, do the needful. So Hanumanji, he slapped her in the face and she fell down to the ground. She was blocking his way. He slapped her. I don't remember if it was face, but somehow he slapped her somewhere. And she fell to the ground. She was shocked. No one has ever done this to me before. And then she said, "Actually, I was told by the demigods that someday a monkey will come and slap you and knock you down. And that monkey will be the cause of the defeat of Ravana."
and the end of the reign of Sri Lanka. So, Hanumanji, I give you all blessings and benedictions. Enter into Sri Lanka. Find Sita. Give her your message. May your mission be victorious. So Hanuman took a very small form and was traveling around, looking. And ultimately he came to the palace of Ravana. What a majestic, beautiful place. His own, I believe, Ravana's brother or cousin brother was Kuvera, yes? And Kuvera's treasure of demigods. Ravana defeated him and stole his airplane that was there. Such wealth. The furniture was made of jewels, diamonds, rubies, emeralds, gold, pure crystal. Then he saw, laying on a beautiful crystal bed, Ravana. And all around him were beautiful, beautiful maidens, ladies. When Hanumanji saw Ravana, Ravana was the son of a great Brahmin. He was thinking, if this person was only a devotee, what service he could do. But he had that one quality, envy. He wanted to exploit and enjoy the property of the Lord. So I will end here. Hanumanji found Sita Devi at the Ashoka Van. He saw her crying out the names of Ram. She was actually about to end her life in separation from Ram by tying the braids of her hair around her neck. He saw Ravana and these Rakshasas and Rakshasis harassing her, threatening her. But she could not be moved for even a moment from her pure, chaste devotion to Sri Ram. And Hanumanji came before her by chanting the glorious names and pastimes of Sri Ram. He gave her hope and gave her the ring of Lord Ram and promised Sita Devi that Ram will soon come to deliver you. It is his promise. Sita Devi blessed Hanumanji and took one of her jewels and gave it to him to show Ram that she is still waiting for him. But Hanuman, as a great devotee, wasn't just satisfied doing his service. He wanted to do something more. So he performed his duty. Gave the message to Sita, and that message kept her alive, gave her the will to live. But then he decided to do some nice destruction to the Ashoka Van, because this Ashoka Grove was the favorite garden of Ravana. So he just started tearing it apart, and guards came. And he just destroyed them all. Then the attention came to Ravana that there's this monkey just destroying your Ashoka Van. This was unbelievable. It was impossible in his kingdom for someone to go against his will. So he sent some of his generals, and they were defeated. Whoever went, Hanuman, they had weapons and astras, and Hanuman just used his feet and his tail, and sometimes he just picked up a metal rod and just devastated them. Ultimately, Ravana sent his eldest son,
Indrajit. That was a very, very exciting battle that took place.
And Hanuman actually decided to be captured because he wanted to go right into Ravana's inner chambers and see what's happening. And he wanted to tell Ravana what he thought of him. So Indrajit tied him up with this snake rope, mystic weapon, and he was brought before Ravana in the court, in the king's court. And Ravana was blaspheming him like anything. Actually, he was going to kill him. But Vibhishan said, no, it is against the codes of Kshatriya to kill a messenger. So they decided to punish him. And we all know that wonderful story. Ravana proclaimed that monkeys are very proud of their tails. And it's actually a fact. If you analyze how monkeys live, they're very proud of their tails. So they wrapped the end of his tail with various inflammable substances and soaked it in oils and lit it on fire while Hanuman was tied up in the snake rope, mystic ropes. Now, a devotee sees every situation as an opportunity to do more service. Even difficult situations. He doesn't think, why is this happening to me? I'm just doing my seva. Why is God doing this to me? Even the most difficult situations, a devotee's intelligence is thinking, what is the opportunity being given to me to do more service in this situation? Whether you're sick, whether you lose everything, whether you die, whether everyone turns against you, whether all your ambitions just crumble before you, or whether everything's auspicious and nice and prosperous and all your desires are being fulfilled. Either way, a devotee thinks in terms of service. In this situation, how could I best serve? It's a consciousness. It's a perspective. If we have this positive consciousness, God is putting me in this predicament. How could I increase my devotional mood and increase my devotional service in this situation? If you think that way in all circumstances, you'll always be happy. And you'll always be increasing and advancing in Krishna consciousness, and your service will always be prospering. But if we see a situation in terms of I and mine, then we simply become discouraged and we become miserable. Actually, happiness is not a physical state. Happiness is a state of mind. Where there's inner fulfillment of the heart, there's real happiness, even if there's so much pain of the body, even if there's so much stress in the mind. So how our outlook in life is so important. A sincere devotee should try to train the mind in every situation, even miserable situations, we fold our palms and say, Krishna, thank you, I deserve worse. I offer my obeisances to you with gratitude. And we see, what service can I render in this circumstance? Devotees are expert at taking a great adverse condition and turning it into something wonderful. Haribol. Look at Srila Prabhupada. The first few months of his mission, he had 3 heart attacks, paralysis. And now, for the rest of time, the whole world glorifies him and loves him because he went through that situation and never gave up his service. Srila Prabhupada, at times, he lost. In Jhansi, He lost everything. Spent a year developing that project and everything was taken away. But did he give up? He saw it as an opportunity. Let me go to Vrindavan and do something more. Even so-called failures were stepping stones to greater success because of his enthusiasm, his faith. So even reversals are actually wonderful opportunities. So Hanumanji, his prized tail was on blazing fire, and he was thinking, how can I use this situation to glorify Sri Ram? And then, he just expanded his body and broke all those ropes into little string threads. And then he said to Ravana, if you see what Ram's servant will do, and then you decide whether you want to face Lord Ram. And then he just jumped up to the top of a building and touched it with his tail and burned it on fire. And he jumped to the next building and touched his tail, and that set on fire. And he jumped building to building to building, garden to garden to garden, palace to palace to palace, until the whole city of Lanka was blazing with fire. Actually, this is another lesson. When materialistic people try to do something against God, the very thing that they do and create will be the cause of their own destruction. So Hanuman lit the whole city on fire. And meanwhile, Sita Devi, she was sitting in Ashokavan. And she could understand what Hanuman was doing. She was so happy. She was so proud of her Hanumanji doing this extra seva. She prayed from her heart to Agni Dev, the fire god, that as my Hanumanji is doing this seva, please grant me this one benediction. She's asking her devotee for this benediction. She said, as he's burning the city in the raging heat of fire, let the fire on his tail cause it, let that fire on his tail be very soothing, cooling, and refreshing. And as Hanuman was burning the city down, he felt his tail was so refreshed. Like some sort, perhaps like some sort of menthol ointment. And he understood clearly that it is due to the prayers and the blessings and mercy of Sita that I am feeling this. And after he did his work of setting all of Lanka on fire, he called out with a loud voice, Ravana! And all the Rakshasa dynasty, I am just the insignificant servant of the servant of the servant of Ram, and you have seen what I have done. Soon the Supreme Master Ramchandra will come. Give Sita back and surrender. Then he jumped in the ocean and put his tail out and returned to the mainland in one jump. And all of his comrades were waiting for him. So happy. They were so excited waiting for the news. And he told them the whole story. Then they went back to Kishkindha Kshetra. And Sri Ramchandra, when he heard the news of Hanuman's great success, he came to greet him. Hanumanji fell offering dandavats at the feet of Sri Ram. And Lord Ram, out of love for his beloved servant, lifted him up and embraced him. One of the most pleasing historical incidences in all of the scriptures, when Ramchandra wept tears of affection for Hanuman, embracing him in his own arms for the wonderful, selfless service that he had rendered. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. As we approach Sri Ram Navami, let us try to emulate, meditate on the qualities that the Supreme Lord Sri Ramchandra manifested to the world through his beloved devotees, on how to approach him, how to serve him, how to pass by all obstacles and attain the great treasure that he has come to give, pure unalloyed devotional service. It is with that loving desire that our beloved Srila Prabhupada has crossed all difficulties and obstacles here in Bombay to manifest Sri Sri Radha Ras Bihari, Gornitai, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman. Let us be grateful and reciprocate with his love. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Radha Das Bihari ji ki jai.